I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Once again, I'm joined by Ezra Levant, the lawyer, political activist, journalist, and television personality on the Sun News Network, has a new book out, The Enemy Within: Terror, Lies, and the Whitewashing of Omar Khadr. Like his previous book, Shakedown and Ethical Oil, it's already a bestseller and also a strident, timely book. Omar Khadr has been held at Guantanamo Bay since October 2002, when at the age of 15, he was accused of killing a U.S. sergeant in Afghanistan. His lawyers, as well as his defenders in Canada, his family, and certain members of the press, have argued that he's a child soldier and a victim. He struck a plea deal where he will be able to serve part of his sentence in Canada, not if Mr. Levant has his way. In the book, he argues that Khadr, now 25, has become more radicalized in prison, that he's not disavowed the hateful terrorist views he holds. We'll get Mr. Levant to tell us about what's gone on with Khadr, what the chances are of his return to Canada, and what he's doing and suggesting others ought to do to prevent that from happening. It's a timely book, as I've said, and it looks at how we view immigration, terrorism, the law, and our relationship with the United States. The book is published by McClelland & Stewart. Ezra's website is at ezralevant.com, and his show, The Source with Ezra Levant, is on nightly on Sun News. That's on here on this coast at 2 p.m., 5 p.m. Eastern. Please welcome back to the Planta on the Line program, Ezra Levant. Mr. Levant, good morning.
Great to be back on the show. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So let's start with Omar Khadr and who he is. Was he born in Scarborough?
Yeah, he's a Canadian citizen, born and raised. But at a very young age, he started going to Pakistan and Afghanistan with his terrorist father. And where Canadian youth might go to Boy Scouts, well, Omar Khadr learned other skills like poisons and bomb making and being a spy, and literally growing up, the family business was terrorism. Omar Khadr's dad, Ahmed Khadr, was a Canadian of convenience. He came here, he took advantage of our health care, he took advantage of our education, but his life's mission was Al-Qaeda. He was a personal confidant and fundraiser for Osama bin Laden, and he would actually do the mosque circuit, the speaking circuit, raising money from Canadian mosques for Osama bin Laden. So that is the family business in which Omar Khadr grew up, hating Canada, loving terrorism, and basically making a series of choices that that led to his murdering a U.S. Army medic in 2002.
Well, we'll get to what he did in 10 years ago, but just the sort of for background, his father has since died, right?
That's right. I mean, and not a peaceful death in his bed. His father wasn't just a fundraiser for Al-Qaeda. He was involved in actual terrorist gunfire and violence as well. His father, ironically, was captured more than 10 years ago by the Pakistani authorities and held as a terrorist. But Jean Chrétien, Canada's prime minister, lobbied Pakistan to release him because of media pressure. We sprang Ahmed Khadr out of jail, and he just simply came back to Canada and used it as a base camp for more terrorism. He finally died in a hail of bullets. Well, now Omar Khadr's falling in his dad's footsteps. He's in jail, too, and there are those who want to spring him out of jail, like father, like son. And that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, is to make the case against springing Omar Khadr, convicted, confessed terrorist and murderer, to make the case against letting him back out on our streets like his father was let go more than 10 years ago.
Now, his mother and the siblings, where are they today?
They're in the Toronto area, too. Not all of them are alive, not all of them are in one piece, because terrorism really is their family business. I mean, another one of the siblings was wounded overseas. They always come back to Canada when they want our free health care. That's an irritating factor here. They look at Canada as a disgusting place. Omar Khadr's mother, Maha Arar, says Canada is a lascivious, libertine place where all men grow up to be gay. Seriously, she said she hates Canada, but the one thing she loves about it is we give her free health care for her murderous family. And one of the things that worries me about Omar Khadr, if he would be released early, is that he would come back to Canada, and who would be his support network? Who would be his mentors, his friends, his camaraderie? Well, his terrorist-supporting family, and that's extremely dangerous. If you've got a confessed, convicted murderer who is unrepentant, has never shown a trace of remorse, who is more of an Islamic fundamentalist than ever. And yet he's coming back to a family that's egging him on. That is a cocktail for more terror and violence. That is a recipe for disaster. And I don't want that disaster to happen on Canada's streets. I want this guy to be locked up in a prison as long as possible. And unfortunately, he will come back to Toronto sooner or later.
So back to what he did and why he ended up in Guantanamo. In 2002, he was in Afghanistan. And he lobbed a grenade at some American forces, did he?
That's right. I mean, he was actually in an old fortress in the town of Khost, Afghanistan. And the U.S. Special Forces had surrounded the place. And then they got on the loudspeakers and announced a message in various languages, Pashto, English, Arabic, saying, look, everybody get out of that fort. We're going to bomb it. But women, children, men who don't want to fight, you can leave now and we will hold our fire. And a lot of other people did leave, but not Omar Khayyam. He chose to stay because his life's ambition was to murder an American. And so he hid in this fort. The Americans bombed it. And then when they came in, he lobbed a grenade that killed a U.S. Army medic named Christopher Spear. Now, he was quickly caught. And when he was lying there on his back, he looked up at the Americans, and the first words he said was, F you, Americans, shoot me now, because he had just done his life's ambition. He murdered an American, and now he wanted to go to heaven to get his 72 virgins as a martyr for Allah. Now, instead of shooting him right there, the Americans showed what a professional, humane military force is like. They actually immediately called in an ophthalmologist to fly in from Kuwait to save Omar Khadr's eye, which is ironic, given that Omar Khadr just blinded another man named Lane Morris. Mm-hmm. So in the face of such violence and terrorism, the Americans responded with generosity and humanity, and they flew in a doctor, and then they took him to Bagram Air Base, and then they took him to Guantanamo Bay, where he is being treated like a young prince ever since. Seriously, I mean, his life is a life of leisure, Sony PlayStation, big screen TV, gourmet meals three times a day, the right to pray in any way he chooses. I mean, let me talk about that for a second. They have liberal Muslim imams who are military chaplains at Guantanamo Bay. What I mean by that is Muslim preachers who try and tell these terrorists, look, you can be a Muslim and not hate the West and not be violent. Right. Let us show you how. But Omar Khadr refuses to meet with those liberal imams. He prefers instead to stay a radical terrorist, and he actually leads the services at Guantanamo Bay. He's memorized the Quran. He actually leads the religious services, even though he's the youngest one there, because he is so respected, because he actually murdered a U.S. serviceman. He's the young prince. It's like he's moving up in the mafia crime family. He's the young Michael Corleone who wants to take over as the godfather from his own dad.
Could the system at Guantanamo, could they have done better perhaps to de-radicalize him? Or is it just his choice that the prisoners there can do as they wish?
Well, they're given a tremendous amount of liberty there. I mean, I guess you can't force a guy to listen to a liberal approach to Islam. You can't force it on anyone. The terrifying thing is that Omar Khadr's own lawyer, Dennis Edney, has twice publicly called for Omar Khadr to be de-radicalized. That's terrifying to me, to know that Omar Khadr's own lawyer is afraid of him. Now, there are no de-radicalization programs for terrorists in Canada. There are none. And the ones in Saudi Arabia don't exactly have a stellar track record. About half of all the Guantanamo Bay detainees who were let go back to a life of terrorism and violence. And an expert psychiatric opinion that was unrefuted at trial said that Omar Khadr is highly likely to reoffend for the three reasons I suggest. Number one, he's unrepentant. Number two, he's more fundamentalist than ever. And number three, his family support is pro-terrorist. The only question is, will he kill again, or does he think he'll be a more successful weapon for Al-Qaeda by being a propaganda tool, by giving speeches on campus, by going on the CBC as a pundit, maybe by running for the Canadian Parliament, for the Green Party or the NDP or the Liberals maybe even. I mean, Omar Khadr is a free man strutting down the streets of Toronto, mugging for the cameras, giving speeches on campus, fundraising in mosques like his dad. is a billion-dollar PR propaganda victory for Al-Qaeda. Whether or not he kills anyone, I don't know. But we know that he's going to be welcomed like a hero. I mean, the consensus media already treat him like a hero.
The other thing that this book highlights is, as you mentioned already, the so-called consensus media and how they have viewed Qatar. It's obviously different than how you view him. Have they been manipulated, do you think? And what do you think is their motivation, in particular, people like Michelle Shepard, the Toronto Star, Judy Rebick, and the sort?
They were manipulated, but it was a willing manipulation. I spoke with Dr. Michael Wellner, the forensic psychiatrist, who spent 2 days with Omar Khadr talking to him about his worldview. The whole conversation was videotaped, by the way. I'll get back to that in a moment.
Yeah.
But Omar Khadr views the media as Al-Qaeda assets, like pawns on a chessboard. Omar Khadr views Michelle Shepard and the CBC and the Toronto Star the same way he might view battalions of terrorists or grenades to be thrown. They are weapons. They are things to be manipulated. And if they are willing to go along with it, all the better. Now, why would any journalist go along with that? Well, here's my theory. There are some people out there who hate the war on terror, hate our military, hate Guantanamo Bay, hate the whole idea of NATO going to liberate Iraq and Afghanistan. And so they want to discredit these things, especially when George Bush was the president until 2008. And so you have people who normally would be appalled by this fascist, theocratic, illiberal Muslim fundamentalist. I mean, Omar Khadr hates the idea of women's equality, hates the idea of gay rights, hates the idea of nonviolent solutions to problems, hates the idea of infidels. So normally someone like a Judy Rebick or Michelle Shepard would be someone who would be terrified of that. But they see that Omar Khadr is a powerful PR tool to undermine America, war on terror, Guantanamo Bay, CSIS, the FBI, CIA. And so they've turned him into this hero. So it's both push and pull. Omar Khadr loves to use the media as his political pawns, and the media are happy to go along with it because it suits their aims of undermining the war on terror. And that is what motivated me to write this book. I was reading the reports out of Guantanamo Bay a year and a half ago, when Omar Khadr was on trial. I thought, this is not reporting. These are love letters. It's like when women fall in love with death row inmates, yeah, and become pen pals with them and then actually get married to them. You know, that strange psychological phenomenon that sometimes happens? That's what this felt like to me. I felt like I was listening to the reports of reporters who had literally fallen in love with Omar Khadr, Michelle Shepard being the worst example of this. And I thought, I want to know what is really happening down there. And the more I looked, the more I realized that we were not getting the whole story. We were getting stories, the facts that fit one narrative. Omar Khadr is a little lamb who was abused. Every fact that did not support that theory was discarded. For example, let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Omar Khadr, when he would get into disagreements with guards, he would tell them that in his mind he would go to his happy place of reliving the murder in his head, and that was the happiest day of his life, and it would make him feel better when he was down in the dumps. Could you imagine that? That's a Paul Bernardo level of evil. So Omar Khadr would boast to the guards that he killed an American soldier and that it was made him feel awesome. Now, Michelle Shepard and the CBC don't dare publish that because that doesn't jive with their thesis that this guy's just a little lamb who got swept up with it and he didn't mean it really. No. Or how about the fact that, his own lawyer calling for his de-radicalization, that has not been emphasized. Or even something more basic, like a proper photo of him. The photo that is so ubiquitous was not a photo of him at a few weeks shy of 16 years old when he murdered this American. It was a photo of him from junior high, handed out by his mother to the press, that was published a million times by them. That's not how he looked when he was captured. We know how he looked when he was captured because along with him we captured Al-Qaeda home movies of Omar Khadr, a scruffy teenager, assembling improvised explosive devices. So we know exactly, and posing with an AK-47 machine gun. So we know exactly what Omar Khadr looked like. We've just never been shown that by the CBC or the Toronto Star, because they all prefer to use that little lamb photo of him at 14 years old. That is not what he looked like when he committed his murder. I mean, you may as well use a photo of him at birth or in kindergarten. It's just as inaccurate.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you mentioned this, he's a psychologist, I guess, Dr. Michael Wellner.
He's a psychiatrist. Which is an actual medical doctor. And he's not just any old forensic psychiatrist. He really is the top forensic psychiatrist in America. He's pulled in on the most senior cases. He's the kind of guy you call in to go head-to-head with a Hannibal Lecter-type character. I mean, Omer Khadr is no dummy. Omer Khadr's dad, remember, was a computer engineer, brilliant family, evil but brilliant. Omer Khadr himself speaks five languages, has memorized the whole Quran, is incredibly personally disciplined. So Omer Khadr outsmarted just about everyone he encountered in his life. That's why they had to bring in a top gun like Michael Wellner to sit down with him for two full days, videotape running, just to get inside his mind. And that was fascinating. Now, I have not seen this video, and in fact, no one in Canada has, because this video has not been released by the U.S. Pentagon, and I know why. Because if we were to see the depths of the depravity of Omer Khadr, 8 hours of conversation with the psychiatrist, we would see that we are bringing back a Paul Bernardo-style evil man, and there would be no way in heck our government would allow that prisoner transfer. And so when President Obama asked Prime Minister Harper to accept the transfer of Omer Khadr back to Canada, that information was withheld. And has been withheld to this day. What I'm saying is, we were asked to take Omer Khadr without the Americans showing us just how dangerous he was. And that's why I think we shouldn't take him back. We shouldn't take him back anyways, because he's a convicted murderer who should serve his time in America. But we were tricked. We were tricked into agreeing to take him, because the Americans did not show us everything they knew about how depraved and dangerous this man is.
Now, if you came face-to-face with Omer Khadr, what would you say or do?
Well, the first thing I would do is I would probably dial 911 or I would run, because he is a cold-blooded killer with, seriously, 007-style training. I mean, weapons training, bomb-making training, poisons training, espionage training. He's not just some dumb Taliban peasant who had a rifle thrust in his hands. He's a cunning, cool-headed murderer. I mean, when everyone else was fleeing that little fort in Afghanistan, panicking and running, Omer Khadr kept cool. He stayed in the fort. He didn't waste his ammunition. He waited for the Americans to come in and lob the grenade. That's how cool and collected he is as a bad guy. And I would never want to be in the same place as him, the same city as him. He could kill him. And that was when he was 16. Yeah. Now he's done nothing but study the Quran and work out for 10 years. And he is ripped. I mean, they have enormous physical fitness opportunities at Guantanamo Bay. He's ripped. He can do 100 curls, body curls. I mean, he crunches. I mean, the man has been training for 10 years. And according to Dr. Michael Wellner, he is bitter and entitled and unrepentant and vengeful. I would not want to be in the same place as him. I don't want any Canadian to be in the same place as him. And yet, under this bargain that Harper did with Obama, Omer Khadr could be back on Canadian streets any day now, because he was convicted and sentenced to 40 years by this jury. Mm-hmm. But Obama gave him an 8-year plea deal to let him back on the streets in 8 years. But then Obama asked us to take him after just 1 year. So that 1 year is up. And literally, he could be flown back to Canada at any moment. And he would be coming in on a private jet, because, of course, he can't fly commercial because he's on the no-fly list. So he could land here any day, and within months he could be spun through a parole process and back on the streets. That's why this book is so urgent. We've got to stop Omer Khadr from coming back into our neighborhoods and playgrounds and schools and synagogues and mosques and universities. We've got to keep this confessed Bernardo-style killer in prison.
So Vic Taves, he's the public safety minister. He has, I guess, the final say in all of this, does he?
Well, theoretically, the prime minister has the final say. In fact, it's not theoretical. That's actually how it does work. There's a law called the International Transfer of Offenders Act, and the law does just what it sounds like. If there's a Canadian that's serving jail time overseas, they can apply to finish their jail term in Canada. That's typically something we do if, say, a Canadian is caught buying drugs in Thailand or something, and the jails are really bad, and maybe the justice system wasn't fair. So they can apply and serve the rest of their term here in Canada. But there's a checklist in the International Transfer of Offenders Act, and one of the checklist items is there a public danger? Now, some tourist who bought a bag of marijuana is not a public danger, but Omer Khadr is an extreme danger, and we haven't even been shown the disclosure of just how dangerous he is. And by the way, most of the people who come to Canada under this International Transfer of Offenders Act, they had maybe an unfair legal system. Omer Khadr had lawyers with him the entire time he was in this judicial process in the United States. The process was approved by the U.S. Supreme Court. And as I mentioned before, his jail in Guantanamo Bay is one of the most comfortable jails in America, from the sports to the gourmet meals to the religious freedom. Omer Khadr has no case to come back to Canada, no compelling case at all. We have a compelling case to keep him out, the public danger. Vic Taves has to honestly answer, is it safe to bring him back? And there is no way in hell it's safe. And that checklist, by the way, does not include a box that says something like, oh, does Barack Obama really, really, really want to get rid of a political problem? No, that is not what the law says. The law says, is it in Canada's interest? Is it in the interest of public safety? And the answer is no, and it's especially no, given that no one in Canada has yet seen that 8-hour videotape of that interview with the murderer. Don't you want to see Omer Khadr unfiltered for 8 hours talking about his hatred, talking about his fundamentalism, talking about what it felt like to murder another man? Don't you want to see that before we make the decision to bring him back? And so I think Vic Taves has a responsibility to say no and to not accept this prison transfer at all, but certainly not before he sees that 8-hour videotape.
Now, you have friends in the current government, even one minister who you had a bit of a problem with last year, James Moore. He tweeted, I guess, a week or so ago that he's reading your book. What's the sense that you get from where this government is heading in terms of a decision on this?
Well, it's interesting to me because, as I mentioned, the agreement between Harper and Obama let Khadr come back to Canada after 1 year. Now, that 1 year expired last October. So I thought he'd be back in Canada October, November of last fall. But it didn't happen, and it's March already. So that's, what's that, about 5 months or so. Now, why is that? And my theory is that the Conservative government felt pressured into this deal that they didn't want to do, and so now they're looking for a way out of it, and maybe they're a little bit less eager to be as sympathetic to Obama's requests as they were in the past. I mean, Obama just slapped us in the face with their Keystone and Cell decision. So maybe, just maybe, Harper's looking for a way out. And so the first thing maybe he's doing is delaying this. And if he can delay a decision until after November, well, I'd say there's a 50-50 chance that President Obama might not even be reelected. So then they can break their promise to Obama without any political consequences. But I think they're also looking for a legal way out of their promise. Not that they need a legal way out, because, like I say, the law is clear. You know, it's got nothing to do with a promise to Obama. But if they can show that the U.S. State Department did not disclose the relevant and material information to us about just how dangerous this killer was, then maybe they can say, you know what, you pulled a fast one on us. We are going to get out of our promise because you have played fast and loose with the facts. So I think, I have no direct knowledge about their thinking. This is just my hunch based on their delay and their interest in the book, and I know that a book is being circulated to everyone in cabinet. I think that the Conservative government regrets making that promise to Obama. I think they no longer love Obama like they did before he slapped us around with the Keystone XL decision. I think they're frustrated that we were withheld that key disclosure of that videotape, and I think they're looking for a way out, either by ragging the puck until after the November U.S. elections, or by saying, hey, Obama, you tricked us. We're not going to live up to our end of this terrorist swap.
Now, you've been on this program with your two previous books, Shakedown and Ethical Oil. This book, like those two, are bestsellers already, or is a bestseller already. A lot of the bestsellers in this country are usually by authors or about subjects that aren't necessarily from your side of the political spectrum or share your political philosophy. Since you've been a bestseller yourself, do you think you've changed sort of the attitudes in this country, maybe about human rights commissions, oil sands, or Omer Khadr?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of forces at work on these important issues. I guess I am one of them. I note with great satisfaction that just a few weeks ago, the Canadian Parliament had a vote on a private member's bill to repeal the censorship provision of the Canadian Human Rights Act. Now, that's something I called for in my book Shakedown 3 years ago. So, you know, I'm not taking personal credit for it, but I helped shine a light of public scrutiny on the issue, and a lot of people got involved, and obviously it took an MP to introduce that bill and the Justice Minister to approve it. So, yeah, I think that book did make a difference. And on ethical oil, well, that phrase that I coined is now common parlance in the debate, and the Prime Minister himself uses it. So that is making a bit of a difference. I mean, I'm not alone. The world of ideas is not a dictatorship. It's very democratic. It's very participative, especially in the era of blogs and talk radio and the Internet. So my point is, yeah, I'm not going to take credit for more than I should, but ideas do matter, and our side of the argument needs to get out there. And even in the era of the Internet, books have a place, because a book is where you can make a long-form argument. It's where you can put hundreds of footnotes to back up something. A book is where you can really go deep on something, deeper than in an interview, deeper than in a blog post. And a book gives you credibility when a reputable publishing house like McClellan and Stewart puts their name on something, vets it, lawyers it, fact-checks it, edits it, makes it pretty, and gets it out there. And when reputable booksellers like Indigo and the Chapters and Amazon move that book, that gives it an imprimatur that this is part of the debate. It may be a controversial side of this story, but it is part of the debate. So I have to say that writing these books, Shakedown, Ethical Oil, and The Enemy Within, has been a very important part of my own personal battle to change public opinion. And I think those battles, joined by hundreds of others, have been successful. And hopefully, I mean, the measure of success for The Enemy Within, my book about Omar Khadr, is very simple, Joseph. Mm-hmm. Can we get the Minister of Public Safety to say no to the prison transfer? It's a very, very simple test. It's sort of an on-off, yes-no, black-white kind of test. And we will know soon enough if this book made a difference, and if this book whipped up enough grassroots opposition that the Conservative government listened to it. So we will know in a few months if this book was as successful as the other two.
And so how are things going at Sun News, and how do you find time to write these books with the show every day?
Well, you know, I love working for Sun News. It's a great honor. And not just an honor, it's a huge megaphone. I mean, the kind of things that I write about in my book, I talk about almost every day on the show.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so I can repurpose these issues. So it doesn't actually take away from books. It magnifies them. I'm pretty busy. I have some help that I acknowledge in the acknowledgments page of my book. I have some help with research and fact-checking and editing. Jenny Bradshaw, McClellan Stewart, Kevin Libben, who has helped me as a freelancer. So I don't do it all by myself. Even a book is a team project, especially when there's so many facts. And, you know, I did fly down to the States personally to meet with the prosecution psychiatrist, and I mean, obviously I'm leading the trajectory of the ideas, but even in my books, and certainly on my TV show, it's a team. I mean, you cannot produce a TV show on your own. You need a team of researchers and producers to do it, especially on a daily basis. So, Joseph, I guess in answer to that, yeah, I'm busy, but I also have great helpers, both on TV and in books.
It's good to talk again, Ezra. Best of luck with the book.
Thanks so much, Joseph.
You're very welcome. You can watch Ezra's show, The Source, with Ezra Levant, weeknights on the Sun News Network. EzraLevant.com is his website. The book is called The Enemy Within, Terror, Lies, and the Whitewashing of Omar Khadr. It's published by McClelland and Stewart. Its author, Ezra Levant, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.